our country can only become one of two things, in my opinion. It can become what we sit back and allow it to become, or it can become what we stand up and make it. And I choose, you know, the latter option. We spend too much time talking about each other, talking at each other, and talking past each other. Why don't we try spending some time talking with each other?
So tell me a bit about how this works for you. How, you know, you talk about reaching out to people who fundamentally disagree with you and who you disagree with. What does that look like? Give us an example.
I have some background that that many people don't have, in that as a small child, you know, I'm 60 years old now. As a small child, I was the child of parents in the U.S. Foreign Service. So I spent a lot of time living overseas in various countries. Today, as a professional musician who tours this country as well as the world, when you combine my travels, I've been in a total of 56 different countries on six continents. So literally, starting at an early age, I've been exposed to a multitude of ethnicities, religions, cultures, etc. And all of that has shaped my perspectives, you know, from an early age. So, you know, diversity and a difference is nothing strange to me, whereby to a lot of Americans, you know, they're only used to seeing, you know, their own kind, or maybe some, you know, one person different or one difference, where I've been exposed to a lot. And that, I believe, is what enables me to sit down and be able to talk with people who have fundamentally opposing views to mine, even violently opposed to mine, without, you know, creating a chaos or engaging in violence, because I've already had that background. And that is something, you know, that I, you know, well, I'll put it this way. Mark Twain had a quote that has gone on to become one of my favorites, and it's called the travel quote. And he said, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. And many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's lifetime." And I just find that, you know, so true. So I try to apply what I have gained from my travels in my conversations with other people. And surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, it seems to work. People seem to listen and they take it in. Nobody changes overnight, but I have caused a lot of change.
So in your bio, it says that your efforts to improve race relations would include, as an African-American, engaging with members of the Ku Klux Klan. Is there a story there?
There are a lot of stories there. There are over 200 stories there. You know, not everybody is going to leave the KKK or any other supremacist group. You know, there will be those who will go to their grave being hateful, violent, and racist. But I've had success with over 200 people leaving the Klan and neo-Nazis, you know, throughout my 30 years of engaging with dialogue. Because, you know, like I said, most people don't want to sit down and talk with these people. As you stated, a lot of people would say, you know, they would run the other direction. Well, you know, nobody is going back to Europe. Nobody is going back to Africa. We all live here, and we live here together. And it's time that we got to know one another. That does not mean that we have to support one another's beliefs, but we have to learn how to sit down and have a civil conversation. And in doing so, I have found that they begin to see that we have more in common than we do in contrast. And they began, you know, reevaluating their ideologies. I don't say that I convert anybody, but I've been the impetus for their change, because I have allowed them to engage with me. And sure, I hear all kinds of offensive stuff. You know, I've heard, you know, that black people have smaller brains than white people, that, you know, that we're prone to crime. That's why there are more blacks in prison than there are whites. I've heard, you know, that we're lazy. We don't want to work. We want to scam the government welfare system. Every stereotype you can imagine, I have heard, and I've sat across the table from people telling that to me, to my face. Sure, it's offensive, but I also realize that these people don't really know what they're talking about, because they're certainly not talking about me. I don't have a criminal record. I've never been on welfare. I have, you know, a college education, and in many cases, I have more education than them and most of their group put together. So I don't take personal offense to it, because I realize is coming from a place of ignorance. So I seek to educate.
You mentioned that you grew up living overseas with your folks who were in this foreign service. What drove you to continue that work?
So when I was overseas, I went to international schools. I'm talking about back in the early 1960s, when I first started going over as a young child. And my classes were filled with kids from Nigeria, Italy, France, Germany, Australia, Japan, Russia, you name it. If those countries had an embassy there, all of their kids went to the same school. So that's what I grew up around. That was the norm for me. However, when I would come back home here to my own country, I was either in all black schools or black and white schools, depending upon whether I was going to the still segregated or the newly integrated. And there was not the amount of diversity that I had overseas or that we see in the classrooms today. Today you walk into a classroom, it's mixed with people from all over the world, et cetera. But that was not the scenario back in the 1960s here in this country. But it was for me overseas. So literally, I was living about 12 years into the future when I was living overseas, because that scenario had yet to come here. So when it did come, I was already prepared. Many of my peers were not prepared. One of the times when I came back at the age of 10 in 1968, I was marching with the Cub Scouts in Belmont, Massachusetts, and celebrating the ride of Paul Revere right outside of Belmont from Lexington to Concord. I lived in Belmont. And most people were cheering us on. I was the only Black Scout in the parade. Most people were cheering us on, waving flags, yelling, "The British are coming," and all that kind of stuff. But there was a group of about maybe, I would say, between 4 and 6 people, some kids and a couple of adults, who threw rocks and bottles at me and jeered me and things like that, which I did not understand because I'd never experienced that before. And my first inclination was, oh, those people over there on the sidewalk, don't like the Scouts. I didn't realize, that's how naive I was. I didn't realize that I was the sole target until my den mother, my cub master, and other troop leaders came rushing over and shielded me with their bodies to protect me, and nobody else was getting this protection. I later learned that it was due to something that I was totally unfamiliar with called racism. And believe it or not, when I was told this by my parents, I did not believe them because I had no precedent for this. And those white people over there on the sidewalk who were behaving this way did not look any different to me than my white friends overseas, whether they were my little French friends, my little German friends, Swedish friends, or my fellow Americans from the embassy, or for that matter, my classmates right there in Belmont, Massachusetts, or their parents, who treated me rather well for the most part. So it was hard for me to accept that somebody would want to inflict pain upon me for no other reason than the color of my skin. So at the age of 10, I formed a question in my mind, which was, how can you hate me when you don't even know me? And for the next 50 years, I've been looking for the answer to that question. And no book, that I have a vast library on black supremacy, white supremacy, anti-Semitism, the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazis in Germany, the neo-Nazis over here. None of my books answer that question. So I thought, you know what? Why not go right to the horse's mouth? Why not sit down with someone who would join an organization that has over 100-year history of hating people who do not look like them and who do not believe as they believe? So I went right to the source.